center and coming in as Lube. Hilladyke centered it. And that scores! Matty McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it is. Put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Wednesday, April 24th. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Thanks for hanging out with us on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. We're on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Well, first of all, hello, Vix.
Hello, Patrick. I was wondering if I would get such a quaint introduction or hello.
Try to make that happen.
Good man.
You know, there's a number of potential interesting decisions on the docket for the Flames this summer. And one of them is no doubt what approach they'd like to take with the future of Yegor Sharangovich. Because led the team in goals as a 25-year-old this season, was 25 for the entire season, scored 31 to lead the team, career high, finished just under 60 points. As we know, set the new NHL record for points in a single season from a player from Belarus. Eligible for a contract extension on July 1st, when the Flames acquired him, they signed him to a 2-year deal the following day in June, which does walk him to unrestricted free agency at the end of next season. And so knowing that he is eligible for a contract extension on Canada Day, question is fair to ask, what does the future hold for Sharangovich? Now, I know you and I have had this conversation in the past about the merits of extending him and maybe locking him up on a term deal. He'll be 26 in June, and I think you've got two decisions if you're the Flames or two potential paths to walk down. I guess there's a third, so maybe there's three, but the two that I weigh the most heavily are attacking a long-term extension and seeing if you can't get something 4, 5, 6 years in that range locked in. Or let it ride, go into the season, see how things go, and regroup then. The third option would be, and I know there are some out there who believe this would be the right approach for the Flames to take, that third option would be kind of try to maximize and capitalize on his value being high, coming off a 31-goal season, and maybe exploring a trade this summer for Sharangovich. Now, I have that as my third most desirable outcome, in my opinion. Not to say that, like, I understand all of the different reasonings out there. Those are the options that they could explore. I lean towards the extension. I lean towards seeing if you can lock them up for a deal. I think the Flames are thinking somewhat similar. I asked Craig Conroy about it on Friday, the general manager, and while he wouldn't give a lot of specifics, understandably so, this was the GM on Friday after locker cleanout day when asked about Sharangovich and his future. You just get the sense, and from my understanding, there is definitely a willingness or an openness to have the conversations about something long-term, and this was what Craig Conroy had to say on Friday.
We're going to have our pro meetings coming up, so we're going to talk about all that stuff, like who should we be signing? I mean, obviously we have an idea, we already have an idea, but then, you know, he did have a great year, you know, so you'll start having those conversations, and you're always kind of, you know, there's a July 1st, you really can't do anything until July 1st with a guy with another contract. So there's still time, but all those conversations will be coming up, you know, because we're trying to, you know, as much as it's this year here up above, it's, you know, 3 to 5 years, and
yeah,
you know, you're looking down the road. Okay, how are we going to build this thing? And that's really the secret for us is, you know, but we're gonna have all those conversations coming up soon, and then you know, start putting a plan together.
So that was Craig Conroy and his exclusive sit down with us on Friday. It's available wherever you get your podcasts right now. If you can get him on a decent number on a longer-term deal, I think it makes sense. 4, 5, 6 years in that range. I think it makes sense because I think you give yourself a good chance of having that payoff in the back half of the deal, the latter part of the deal. And if this team is hoping to be out of their retool and ready to truly contend again in 3 or 4 years, well, I think that then you've got a player who I think will still be productive, who's on a, again, depending on what the cap number is, but I believe you can get a decent cap number here that would give you the opportunity for it to provide you some good value for when you're trying to be competitive again and maybe when being tight to the cap is a little bit more of a consideration again.
So the big thing that I kind of grabbed from Craig Conroy's comment there is you're always building out your roster 3 to 5 years. And why wouldn't you want to include a player like Yegor Sharangovich in that 3 to 5 year time span? Now, you mentioned you can look, he's still got 1 year left on his current deal. By the time the extension kicks in, you're looking at age 27. And so you're looking at age 27 to 32 if it's a 5 year deal. But the fact remains is this guy is historic outside of a terrible 2022-23 season with the New Jersey Devils, where he had 13 goals in 75 games. He's always flirted somewhere around that 24-26 goal pace over an 82-game schedule. He had 16 goals in 54 games for the Devils in 2021, 24 goals in 76 games in 21-22. Of course, we all know he had 31 goals, led the Flames in scoring, as you mentioned. The thing that's interesting there is he only had 2 goals in his first 16 games. He had 29 goals in the remaining 66 games of the season. So once he found his stride with the Flames, and first of all, props to the pro scouting department for the Calgary Flames for identifying him as a player in New Jersey, being like, that's a guy that we want to target. And they get rewarded by a player who led the team in goals.
They did a nice job of,
very nice.
Identifying that market inefficiency, right?
Right. So now all of a sudden you've got him for one more year and then he's a pending unrestricted free agent. But 27 to 32, I'd be more than comfortable locking up a guy over that 5 year term who's only got to date 287 NHL games under his belt. So one, you're still getting some pretty prime years and you can historically look at his career again outside of the one down year as being a 25-ish goal guy. Now, is he a 25-ish goal guy or is he a guy that's a 30 goal guy or is he a guy that just scored 30 goals? I think the difference over the course of the contract is a little bit negligible, so I'm not really too worried about that. But he's also a 200-foot player. He's also a fixture on your penalty kill, so on and so forth. So when you're building out your roster 3 to 5 years and you have the opportunity to retain a guy that scored 30 with you in his mid-20s, why would you not try to take that opportunity if you can find a number that is palatable for both you as an organization and Sharangovich as a player?
Now, the player needs to be interested as
right.
well. Right. And that... I want to just play this from Friday and locker cleanout day. I want to set everything up exactly. So what you're talking about is you've got a podium set up with a table, a microphone,
riser, yeah,
a riser, and then looking out at a bunch of us media people, a bunch of cameras, everybody looking at you intently.
I think there was seven or eight cameras just to paint the picture. It's a busy day.
And Yegor's English is good for being here and speaking English for only a few years, but it's very clearly his second language. And I think that needs to be taken into account. So I want to play the question and the answer here. I know there was a lot of, oh my goodness, he's not, he will see. Let me just play the question and answer. And then we can go from there.
You can sign another contract here this summer. Do you see yourself, are you open to staying in Calgary longer term, Yegor?
I think it's, hard question. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah.
And I know that there were some who interpreted that as non-committal. I'm just not so quick to go there because I think he was caught off guard by the question. I think he was already, and this is not being critical at all, I would have been just as nervous as he would have been talking in clearly my second. That would be like me talking in Spanish.
Not French?
I feel more comfortable in French than I would in Spanish, I guess. That was clearly an uncomfortable situation for him, being on a podium with nobody beside him, didn't have anybody, it wasn't like a Coleman Uyghur situation where he had two guys up there. It was just Yegor in that situation, speaking in his second language. I don't think he was ready for the question. I don't think he was anticipating the question. So I don't read that as, now he doesn't want to be here long term. I read that as a guy who was completely caught off guard and didn't know how to react because he was already a little uncomfortable, a lot uncomfortable speaking in his second language. My moral of the story is don't read too much into him saying we'll see and I don't know.
I agree, and I want to add just maybe another layer to that in the sense that if I'm him to a certain degree, I'm going, what are we talking about next? I still got this contract I'm on. Like, I still have to play on this one. Maybe he knows that he's eligible for an extension on July 1 with this contract still going, but I could see how that would completely sort of the question maybe, not that it wasn't a warranted question, but how the question might have blindsided him or caught him off guard because he's still under contract. He's still a member of the Calgary Flames. There's been no discussion whatsoever about him not being a member of the Calgary Flames. So I could understand the situation where, as you laid out, not his first language, maybe being a little bit media shy, being not taken aback by the question, but being surprised by the question. All these things add up. And I don't take I didn't take it on Friday as him being non-committal. And I listening to it back today, yeah. I don't take it as him being non-committal. I take it as, wait, what? Another contract? No, I've still got a year left on this one.
And I mean, I take it as like, I take it as like, oh, I don't think that he really had given it a lot of thought, to be perfectly honest with you, and didn't necessarily in the moment know how to communicate that properly to us in his second language. I honestly believe that's what was going on. And also everything else he said about Calgary, he's been very grateful for the opportunity and has talked a lot about how much different it is here than when he was playing in New Jersey. And at no point has he ever said anything about not enjoying or being grateful to the organization. So I guess my point is I still think that the door is very much open for conversations about something long term. And I think that what we heard from Yegor on Friday, I don't think that should deter the conversations or make you think that he doesn't have the desire to sign here is kind of the thing that I want to put out there, which goes back to the conversation of should they, and you and I are on the same page. So let me just throw out.
I'm like a slightly same page, but slightly less in terms of term, I think, because you're good with the 6 year. I would very much prefer a 5. Is that fair? And now are we splitting hairs, or honestly, is the semantics in me coming out at that point?
Yeah, because I'd be just as fine with a 5 as I would a 6. I think anywhere 4, 5, 6 years, I think makes
4
a
would
lot
be great
sense.
From the team perspective, but if I'm the player, I'd want that extra year.
And it's an interesting one because you're immediately buying unrestricted free agent years. This is not a situation where you're extending a guy and then buying his early unrestricted free agents, but also getting a lot of years when he wouldn't be a UFA. So it's really hard to ballpark. It feels harder anyway to ballpark what the right number would be and what, because you don't usually see it quite in this circumstance.
And we're seeing a massive cap bump next season. So what is a 30 goal scorer worth in 2023-24 versus a 30 goal scorer next season or the season after? We don't necessarily know that just yet in terms of the cap jump, what it's going to do to inflate salaries of players that can do what's the hardest thing to do in the game, which is score goals. We don't necessarily know that yet. We don't know what the new market is going to look like. And you know what? If I'm looking at it from Sharon Govich's perspective, I might want to know what that market looks like before jumping in head first.
Could you? And that's why, you know, a lot of these questions are valid in that. How much does the price potentially go up if they wait? And if they're trying to do this in a year's time when he does have unrestricted free agency looming, if he has another 30 goal season, I think it goes up significantly.
Right.
If it takes a little bit of a step back and he ends up with 19 goals next season, then I don't think that you've lost a lot of leverage if you're the Flames. The only thing that becomes a little bit more difficult is that UFA unrestricted free agency is right there for him, and that becomes a little bit more tantalizing. I guess the reason why I'm less enamored by a trade is that I think there is more value in not dealing him now than there would be in moving him now. And I think there's more value in seeing what type of conversations could be had about a long-term extension as opposed to moving him. Like, I think this is a guy that you did a nice job of identifying. As I mentioned, you kind of took advantage of a market inefficiency and brought a guy in who needed more opportunity. And when you gave him more opportunity, he made the most of it. I just think there's a lot of reasons to think about extending him and seeing if you, like, if you could get him at 5 times 5.5, then I'm signing up for that all day. That looks like a really nice number. That looks like a really nice, that looks like a really solid bet to make that probably doesn't give you a ton of, there's not a ton of downside on your end, and there is a ton of upside, especially at the end of the contract. It feels like that's a fair number from a player standpoint, but you never know what's going through the representative's head. And I think Dan Milstein and the Flames have a pretty solid relationship, even with how Zadorov and how that all played out. Dan Milstein is Sharon Govich's representative. I think they've got a pretty solid relationship there with the Miramanov contract and with the Pospisil contract. I don't think there's any strained relationships there between representation and team. So I do think that the lines of communication will be open.
Well, and from a team perspective, it would just make more sense than trying to trade him, because what are you going to get in a return for Sharon Govich? Are you going to get a first-round pick? And what are you going to draft with that first-round pick? The hope that somebody turns into a 30-goal scorer like Sharon Govich already is, but now you've got to wait some time. And we know that the Calgary Flames want this to be on the shorter end of a retool versus a longer stretch. We all know the players. We heard the players. We obviously know Craig Conroy's feelings about wanting to be competitive and wanting to be competitive quickly. Dealing Sharon Govich doesn't make you any more competitive next season or two seasons down the road from now. He fits the age demographic. He certainly fits the skill demographic. So from a team perspective, wanting to have him a part of your future for the next 4 or 5 years definitely makes sense from my perspective.
A few texts at 960-960. First from Dylan and Revy. I think people talking about Yegor not wanting to stay are overlooking two things. First off, the language barrier and media presence during his presser. Second, locker cleanout day means literally nothing. What have we learned in the last few years? Gaudreau and Tkachuk said they wanted to stay. The next year, Backlund seemed sheepish, and Toffoli Zadorov said more good things about the team and city than anyone in the history of hockey. What happened with all those guys? Don't take anything from locker cleanout day at face value. That's from Dylan and Revy. This reads, he did not say yes. Very simple. That comes from Jerry. And finally, Sharon Govich isn't signing an extension. That would be silly. He can get all the power play time in Calgary next year and then be a UFA no-brainer. There you go. Just a few different takes on that one and the future of Yegor Sharon Govich with or not with the Flames at 960-960. It's Pat and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. We're coming at you on this Wednesday edition of the program from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Worried about radon? They install custom mitigation systems to reduce your risk. To find out more, visit dlbasementsystems.com for a free estimate.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Let's go inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. This hockey season, support local. Find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer. Today, it's Steinberg along with you, and now we say hello to our Wednesday regular. It's time to spin you around the Pacific Division in and outside of the Stanley Cup playoffs. We welcome in Jonathan Davis from NHL Network and NHL Network Radio right now. Hello, JD. How are we doing?
Doing great, Pat. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am very interested in Game 2 of this series between the LA Kings and Edmonton Oilers because, honestly, game one was pretty lopsided. I know it ends up being 7-4 is the final score, but that game was over after, what, about 25 minutes? I mean, it never felt close when the game was, like, from 0-0 until when the Oilers took control. It just never really felt close, did it?
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, it was essentially, it was a 6-2 game. I mean, yeah, LA was never in it. They were manhandled. And, you know, you hear them talk, you know, listen to the post-game interviews and stuff from today, you know, they're saying all the right things, but Pat, saying and doing are two different things. And So let's see what happens. I mean, look, we could get a performance like we did with the Colorado Avalanche last night against Winnipeg, and the narrative completely changes. I don't think it's as likely, but we'll see.
Okay, so, and a big key for them is they've, and this is for anybody, but you've got to be effective in slowing down, shutting down, maybe not realistic, but containing or slowing down McDavid and Draisaitl. What needs to be better in that respect in game two?
Well, you know, for them, it, you know, they rely on their 1-3-1 system. And, you know, I would contend that the 1-3-1, that their system that they play is a system that I think that's more effective for an 82 game regular season than it is in a playoff, because teams just aren't practicing during the regular season to try to beat the 1-3-1. But Edmonton, who's quite familiar with Los Angeles and has the time for additional time to practice, they've solved it. I mean, Connor and Leon and, you know, they were kind of scoffing at the whole idea that this is such a system that can't be beat, you know, prior to the series. And I would argue that I don't think LA, you know, their numbers defensively, Pat, look, they had one of the lowest goals against averages in the NHL. But I think it's more about guys have to be able, if they can play the system and the other team can't break you down, it works. But I don't think that they're great defensive players on that roster. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
I just think, you know, look, Kopitar, yeah, he's a sulky winner. Great, great 200-foot player. I just think it's more about they're so reliant upon this system. And I've always said, you know, it's about the sum of the parts is greater than any one individual.
Yeah, which is why maybe built more for the regular season than the playoffs, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just remember growing up, like the Anaheim Angels were a team that people used to talk about. They were built for the regular season, not for the playoffs. Look, there's no sandpaper on the LA Kings team. Like it's not like they're going to try to, you know, out-tough you. I mean, I heard Elliot and Jeff talking. I can't remember if it was the podcast or Merrick's show today about, you know, maybe LA will just try to do, you know, try to be extremely physical because the refs aren't going to call everything. Well, you know, that's not what you want to do with that vaunted power play in Edmonton. And I just don't think the Kings, you know, they're just not built that way to play that style.
Yeah. Yeah, the penalties didn't help LA. They've got to be significantly more disciplined. And obviously, I mean, look, I thought Rob Brown put it perfectly on Oilers postgame on Monday night when he said, look, the Oilers may not have had the number one power play in the NHL during the regular season statistically, but if you're doing a power rankings or a power play that other penalty kills fear most in the NHL, there's no question it resides in Edmonton.
Yeah, I think it's a great point that Rob makes. Absolutely. And, you know, look, it's what killed Los Angeles last year in their series with Edmonton, and it reared its ugly head in game one. I mean, the Kings talked about, look, we can't have that parade to the penalty box. They were, you know, they were 1-for-4 on the penalty kill. So that's something that has to change. So, you know, look, I think, you know, Cam Talbot has to be better. What I don't think, you know, it's not that he was the reason why they lost, but at the end of the day, like, they're going to need him, I think, to steal a game. And that's just not Cam Talbot.
Yeah. Yeah. And very, very, are you surprised they're sticking with Talbot, or were you wondering if they might go to Big Save Dave in game two?
No, I'm not surprised. I think that, you know, look, again, he's not the reason why they lost. I don't think you make that change right now. Maybe you make that change, you know, if they're down 2-0 and you're trying to find some, you know, something to try to shake things up. Maybe at that point you go to David Rittich. But I you know, look, Talbot for now has been the guy down the stretch. And I thought that, you know, Rittich played against more of the lesser opponents down the stretch. So, no, I'm not surprised.
Okay. We'll move to the Vancouver series, which is now 1-1 in just a second. But the other Pacific Division team that's in action on Wednesday night is Vegas after they took a 1-0 series lead on Dallas in game one. What jumped out at you about the Golden Knights in game one against the Stars as they opened with a win on the road?
Well, can we just start like 70 seconds into the game when, when of course, the captain scores the goal?
Of course he did.
Get things started? Of course he did. I mean,
Twitter had no reaction to that at all.
No, none. No, it was all very quiet. And how about, you know, and the post-game interview that Leah Hextall did with him on ESPN, I mean, you know, the Dallas fans just booing him and Stone can't hear the questions. Look, that him coming back and, you know, they scored a couple of power play goals. That's something that's been a big issue for this Vegas team over the years. I mean, that's the one thing that Vegas has never had is a power play, but they scored two in game one. They were 3-for-3 on the penalty kill. So that stood out to me. I mean, you know, Logan Thompson probably would want the third goal back, Marchment goal, but, you know, I thought held his own. And yeah, look, Vegas had only like, 15 shots in game one. It's not like they were super dominant, but, you know, when you look at the two rosters, Pat, now that Vegas is healthy, there's just not a big disparity. I was saying going in, I think I may have said this to you last week, that, you know, if Jake Oettinger can be a 905, you know, save percentage goalie, then I like Dallas's chances. But if his numbers don't improve from what we saw from game one, then yeah, it wouldn't look good for Dallas. It's not going to look good for Dallas.
Let's move to Vancouver, Nashville. We're chatting with Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider. So you've got the All-Pacific Division series between LA and Edmonton, game two Wednesday night. You've got Vegas, the number four seed in the Pacific, with a 1-0 series lead on Dallas. Game two goes Wednesday night in Dallas. And then you've got the series that shifts back to Nashville now with a 1-1 series tie. And Friday night with a lot of question marks about this Vancouver team coming out of game two. And I guess the number one topic is Thatcher Demko and his long-term prognosis and potential to return to this series, which does not sound positive.
No, I mean, week to week, yeah, he's not, you know, he's not coming back anytime soon. And, you know, look, I would agree with, what was discussed on the broadcast last night on Sportsnet. I mean, I don't think the Canucks played a bad game. It was just, you know, you take a look at what Nashville did. I mean, they got outchanced. It was almost, you know, it was Islanders Carolina light last night, you know, with that game. You know, the shot attempts were 83-35 Vancouver. I mean, you know, it's not like, Nashville just kind of, you know, it was the block party. You know, 30-plus block shots last night, and they had only, 14 or 15 or 16 shots last night. I mean, it's on goal. So, you know, they just played that game that were, you know, it kind of reminded me of the commercial that UC Saros does for, you know, the no goals commercial. Just kind of like what we're doing. Yeah. We're just not going to give up a goal. We're not going to try to score, but we're not going to give one up either.
Have you,
go
ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's just like, you know, it's just something that Vancouver's got to try to fight through.
Have you read any of the discourse on Elias Pettersson? Because as you know, you sent off your topics and, you know, your question is he gripping the stick too tightly? And, you know, there were a number of quality opportunities last night. Like, you've got to be in the right position to be there, right? Like, you've got to be doing the right things to get to those situations, but we're so used to Pettersson, you know, doing it right and making the right decision. And a couple of times he dished off when he probably should have shot, and then he took made some interesting shot selection choices when maybe that wasn't there. A lot of his opportunities got blocked. I don't think he had one on net in game two. What is your observation on Elias Pettersson? Because he is taking it hard on Vancouver Twitter.
Well, I understand it. I mean, look, you've got a guy that just signed, you know, a gajillion dollar contract, and you expect him to perform. And it's not like lack of effort, but he had that yawning cage last night, you know, and it was a perfect example of, you know, is he just gripping it? Because he just fired it wide. And what, he had seven shots, I think it was, that were directed at the net but never got there. So, yeah, look, they're all feeling it. I mean, JT Miller just talking about after the game, like, they've just got to find a way to to create some lanes and just get try to find a way to just get shots through, because it's not like, you know, it's not like Nashville's pressing them. They're just kind of, you know, they're setting up the block party. So, yeah, it's frustrating. But, you know, this is where, you know, a guy like Petey just try to go relax. Maybe go to Tootsie's, you know, tonight or tomorrow night. Go listen to some music or during the day, because it's music 24/7. Go relax and, you know, just kind of take your mind off hockey.
Well, you got the extra day.
That's kind of what they need. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't see them complaining about having to spend an extra day in Nashville, like Boston's complaining about like, the extra day in Toronto.
Jim Montgomery did not like that extra day in Toronto at all. It's a lovely city. It's a great spot to visit. I don't know what Jim's issue is. It's Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider, joins us Wednesdays.
That's
fair enough. Let's move to a couple of non-playoff teams. Was news in the Pacific Division out of San Jose and the decision to fire David Quinn as head coach. How did that decision strike you on Wednesday, Jonathan?
Well, I mean, not totally surprising, only because we had heard, you know, some chatter about it over the last couple of days that this, and look, it stems from Mike Greer's, you know, when he met with the media earlier in the week, and he had, you know, he talked about he was still considering, you know, what he was going to do. You know, look, we're only left with speculation because, you know, look, that was an AHL roster that they were putting out on the ice, and that's not fair to David Quinn. So, you know, I don't, you know, yeah, they finished in last, and, you know, they had the 11-game losing streak to start the year, but it wasn't a fair representation. It's just not a fair situation for any coach to go through. So if you're letting him go, then to me, I got to think that there's some sort of, you know, personality conflict or difference in philosophy between coach and GM, or there was, you know, there was something going on in the room that they just felt we needed to make a change. That's, you know, I hate speculating, Pat, but we don't really have much choice in, you know, we're not left with anything else to do in this case, because it's not about performance. Like, you're not jettisoning that guy after, you know, that roster you left.
We all knew what was in play for San Jose this year. We all knew they were going to be one of the, you know, they were going to be in the 30s guaranteed for, like, that with, as you said, the roster that was on the ice on a nightly basis. We knew where the Sharks were going to finish. It doesn't matter who was coaching them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, look, I think David, you know, so I don't know what it is. You know, you take a look at a guy like Lindy Ruff, who just gets hired in Buffalo, you know, was let go by New Jersey. And, you know, like I thought that was, you know, that was kind of unfair to Lindy, just because, again, for different reasons, yes, expectations in Jersey were very high coming off the year they had. But, you know, he was left with, you know, he lost half of his blue line, and he had a GM that never got him a goalie. Like, I don't think it was fair for Lindy, but, you know, I think when you go, I forget who told me this one. Go look up fair in the dictionary, and that page has probably been ripped out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not always fair in pro sports. That much is very true. You know, it's interesting with what San Jose is trying to accomplish here. You know, your coaching hire now plays into, like, you're thinking, is this the guy? I guess there's two different ways you could look at it as Mike Greer. On the one hand, you're saying, okay, do we get a transitional coach to just let us get some good things in place for when we're ready to come out of this, and then we'll evaluate then? Or are you looking 3-4 years down the road and saying, is this the coach that we think will be the guy for when we're ready to compete again and for when our prospects are ready to take this team over? I'm really curious now as to how Mike Greer goes about this coaching hire.
Yeah, I think it's a very fair point to make. And I think look, I think a GM normally gets two coaches, and then you can start pointing the fingers at the GM if things aren't working out. But if this was some sort of, you know, let's say personality conflict with players, then, you know, maybe he has two coaches. And maybe, you know, I think right now because you've got such a young team, hopefully, and you're tearing things down to the studs here, that maybe it is a guy that's more of that transitional coach that gets, you know, helps to try to build, to set the building blocks for this team. And if it works out, great, and he becomes a guy that can take this team to the next level, that's great too. but I think you're looking more for a teacher at this point than, you know, it's not like you're bringing in a guy like Peter Laviolette into San Jose. Like, I don't think that's the type of coach that you'd be hiring if you're Mike Greer.
And finally, JD, before we let you go inside the Pacific Division, what did we hear from GM Pat Verbeek? He went on their team podcast, and maybe a little insight in terms of what the Ducks are looking to do this summer. What's Pat Verbeek got his eye on this offseason?
Well, he talked about the fact that they're looking at a top six right winger, and they're looking for a top four defenseman. Okay. You know, look, a lot of teams are doing that. But what I thought was really interesting about it, and I thought very smart from the Anaheim Ducks perspective, is that Verbeek is, you know, he comes from the Yzerman school. You get no information. But the fact that he put out that information tells me that he is trying to engage the fan base, to give them some hope, you know, for next season. And I thought it was a really smart move. You know, this was obviously calculated. It wasn't like something that was just off the cuff. I have to believe that this is something that was planned out in the organization. You know, PR and the management side got together and said, hey, look, we need to give our fan base something to get excited about. So that's what he mentioned. But I think it was just a very smart move for this Ducks organization that I believe is heading in the right direction.
JD, enjoy Wednesday on ice in the playoffs, man. When we're talking next week's time, maybe we'll be into Game 6, Game 7 conversations. Maybe not. It's going to be really interesting to see where some of these Pacific Division series end up going. For now, enjoy the rest of Round 1, my friend. Thanks, as always.
I will. Is it still ABE in Calgary?
Absolutely. 100%.
Just checking.
Don't think they're going to get their wish. I don't think we're going to get our wish in round one, but maybe round two.
Okay. All right, bud. Have
Thanks,
a good
JD.
One.
That will do it for Jonathan Davis, our Pacific Division insider, NHL Network, NHL Network Radio, Inside Hockey for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local Calgary, from best from the West, Canadian produce to quality only Alberta meats. Find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in store today. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. We will talk to you on Thursday's program. Thank you, buddy.
Don't threaten me with a good time, pal. Let's go.
That'll do it for this hour. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our producers. And this has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockandSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.